Okay. Hi, everybody. We are in Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 24. Number 24. And we have been discussing the fifth creative hierarchy of solar angels. I've given you many names for these solar angels. And we've been discussing the dual aspects of Manas. We're on page 48 of Esoteric Astrology. We seem to be making great progress at an average of, 2 pages a day, 2 pages per webinar. But we are introducing a number of other subjects. So the dual aspects of Manas, one makes itself felt in the three worlds, and one can be felt in the higher spheres. And by higher spheres, I think we can mean the higher mental plane, although technically it's not one of the very highest spheres. All right, we will move on here. And DK is talking about the hierarchies in general. Let's look at this and get this in order. It is necessary to bear in mind that all these groups are, even when termed formless, the true forms of all that persists. In other words, force fields, let's call them configured force fields, are forms. Okay? So let's put that down. Configured force fields are forms. They are the true forms of all that persists, for all are in the etheric body of the solar logos or planetary logos. We're talking about the cosmic ethers here, the etheric body of the planetary logos or solar logos. This is a point requiring careful emphasis. Students have for too long regarded the form as being the dense physical body. It is our tendency, our habitual response to consider dense form as true form. But for Plato, the true forms were archetypal energy configurations on very high levels. I don't know if he knew about the planes. Probably as an initiate he did, but he didn't present that or explain that in his writings. Whereas to the occultist, the physical body is not a form at all, but a gross maya or illusion, and the true form is the body of vitality. So there are these energy configurations within the systemic body of vitality, which is still within the dense physical body of the solar logos, and within the solar logoic body of vitality, which are the cosmic ethers, is the cosmic ethers. Therefore, these hierarchies are the sum total of the vital lives and the substratum or the substance of all that is. That's a very good statement. They are the sum total of the vital lives. They are etheric in nature. And in a way, monadically, I would say that all of them have to be found within the cosmic ethers. There's a good reason to believe that as man one day has been expressing as a mineral, as a vegetable, as an animal, etc., that even the monads of the very lowest creative hierarchies are still found within the cosmic ethers and not within the dense physical body of the solar logos. So anyway, DK goes on here. We might regard the subject as follows. The four superior groups, now notice he has to be including man, I do believe. The four superior groups are the hierarchies expressing themselves through the three cosmic ethers, the second, the third, and the fourth. That's interesting. So this includes even the divine lives, presumably. including even the divine, let's make it capital, divine lives. So they are expressing through the monadic plane, the atomic plane, and the buddhic plane, through the second, third, and fourth ethers. I wonder why he has left out the logoic plane as the first cosmic ether. These are four superior groups, presumably the divine lives, the divine builders, the triple flowers, and the human creative hierarchy. The two lowest groups are the lives, which are found functioning as the involutionary matter, organized and unorganized, presumably unorganized elemental matter also. The two lowest groups, the lunar lords and the baskets of nourishment, are found functioning as the involutionary matter of the logoic dense physical body, the liquid and gaseous, and that's the systemic physical plane, the systemic astral plane, the systemic mental plane, with the living substance of the four higher subplanes of the systemic dense physical body. Okay, so they're found in the logoic dense physical body, but not really within the densest, let's see, three subplanes, which are our mineral dense, our liquid and gaseous subplanes, systemically considered. So the two lowest groups of lives function within the dense physical body of the solar logos, but in terms of the physical function, only within the systemic etheric level, the living substance, not within the very densest level, and within the liquid and gaseous levels. So somehow the very lowest planes are left out of the consideration, the very lowest three subplanes. The fifth hierarchy has an interesting position as the mediating body between the higher four and those which are found on the lower three subplanes, between the higher four hierarchies, creative hierarchies, including man, because the solar angels do mediate between what man is and what his function may be. Here is this warning again. Hopefully it's okay. Okay. There is a vital and significant correspondence to be found between the seven head centers and the seven groups of egos on the mental plane. And there is an occult analogy between the three head centers, pineal gland, pituitary body, and alta major center, and the expression of these seven groups of egos in the three worlds. Okay, this is one of those profound occult hints. I don't know whether we can fathom it entirely, but the seven head centers may be found within the head. They seem to be under the control of Vulcan, and each one of these head centers corresponds with one of the seven groups of egos on the mental plane. We know we have according to Ray division, egoic groups on all the seven rays, and the seven head centers naturally communicate one of each of the seven rays, and these head centers direct the lower their lower correspondences. They are the master centers within the body, and we're also talking about the directorial function of the seven groups of egos, because all personalities are directed, whether they are conscious of it or not, by their egoic groups, and each human being by his individual ego. And then the analogy continues. There's an analogy between the three three more physical head centers. See, the seven head centers are etheric in nature, but the pineal gland, the pituitary body, and if he means by the alpha major center the carotid gland, then they are physical representations of etheric centers, and the seven head centers work through these three physical centers. I would say that the lower five rays, or the lower five physical head centers, the lower five etheric head centers work through the alta major center, one through the pituitary body, and another, the highest of the head centers, carrying the first ray through the pineal gland. So this, you know, this is something we really have to ponder on, but let us hold the image of seven egoic ray groups on the higher mental plane, seven head centers of man, which are the Vulcanian master directing head centers, and the final expression working out through the physical brain through three particular centers, the alpha major representing the third aspect, the pituitary body in this case representing the second, and the pineal gland representing the first. And you can divide those seven head centers into one and one and five. First ray, second ray, and third ray. That's one way of doing it, at least. And, you know, DK certainly is correct in saying this. This is a most esoteric fact, and all students meditating upon the laws of at one ment must take this analogy into consideration. In other words, the egoic nature has a connection with our etheric and physical brain, soul, mind, brain. And if we want to achieve the expression of the soul within our dense and etheric physical nature, we have to align the ego with the head centers, and certainly with the great center on top of the head, and with the head centers, and ultimately with the pineal gland and with the lesser physical centers within the physical brain. So this type of alignment, it's kind of a, let's call it a soul, etheric, and physical brain alignment. And we have to learn how to do that, and when we study A Treatise on White Magic, some of the methods are given, and in DK's meditation, some of the methods are given. Okay. It is useful to remember the place of these hierarchies in the scheme, that is, in our planetary scheme and also in the solar system, and to realize that upon the sum total of these vital bodies, see, they are etheric in nature. They are not either cosmic etheric or systemically etheric. Upon the sum total of these vital bodies is gradually gathered the dense manifestation which we regard as evolutionary matter. Well, we may regard two things as evolutionary matter. Systemic dense matter, which we can relate to scientifically, and the matter of the three lower planes considered cosmically. The forms are built from the form of all atoms to the body of the ego. See, because we have there the cosmic etheric substratum in the body of the ego, and when it comes to the atom of matter, we have a systemic etheric substratum. The forms are built from the form of all atoms to the body of the ego, from the form of a flower to the vast planetary or solar lotus. See, these are cosmic etheric substratums, cosmic etheric. And the form of a flower is built upon what is called systemic etheric. The form of an atom is built upon systemic etheric energies, and the body of the ego is built upon cosmic etheric. Okay. To the vast planetary or solar lotus, because the hierarchies exist as the aggregate of germ lives. Now, when we're talking about aggregate of germ lives, we are talking about aggregates of monads. Aggregates of monads. They are lives, they are seeds, they are the points, they are the living essence. So the hierarchies are the aggregate of germ lives, and from them germinate all the forms on the various planes and subplanes. So we're dealing really with dimensionalized monadic expression, giving these aggregated germ lives, giving the impulse, providing the model, the etheric model, whether it's cosmic etheric or systemic etheric, and procuring through their very existence the raison, the entire raison d'etre, the reason for being of all that is seen on all planes. In other words, we're talking about the foundational lives which express through all forms on the cosmic physical plane. And of course, if we were talking about the other and released creative hierarchies, we could be talking about forms which express on the cosmic astral plane, but we have no idea really yet about what such forms might be, because just as the astral plane has forms which are relatively fluid when compared to the forms found on the etheric physical plane, systemically considered, so the cosmic astral plane, by analogy, would have forms that are very cosmically fluid when compared with all the many forms found on the cosmic physical plane. This is an analogy, but I think it points in the right direction. Okay. Now, we seem to be ready to go on to hierarchy 6 and 7. They are the non-self-conscious hierarchies. In a way, hierarchy 5, being dual, has one grouping of lives within it that are not only self-conscious but super-conscious, and one lower grouping of lives which are not yet individualized. Hierarchy 6 and 7. These 6th and 7th hierarchies, which provide the substance forms of the three worlds, have a vital and most interesting place. The substance forms. So they are the material, or at least express as the material out of which the forms in the lower three worlds, excluding the higher mental plane, take their origin. They are the forms through which various hierarchies express on the lower 18 subplanes. Every time the DK uses the word vital, watch out, he may be speaking etherically and pranically. This is one of the ways he can give a hint. They have a most interesting place. From the logoic standpoint, they are not regarded as providing principles, because, after all, they are solely within the logoic dense physical body, which is not a principle to the solar logos, just as the dense physical body of a human being is not a principle with regard to the human being, though it may have been in the previous solar system. Yes, they are not regarded as providing principles, but from the standpoint of man, they do provide him with his lowest principles. And the lowest principles of man It depends on how you list them, because they are differently listed in cosmic fire. But the etheric body is considered sometimes a principle, not just a vehicle. Prana is considered a principle. So that has to do with etheric flows in the systemic etheric body, of which man's etheric body is a part. The kama, or desire, is considered a principle. So we have hierarchies providing that kind of astral energy. And also lower manas is considered to be a principle, and these hierarchies, active within the dense physical body of the soul or logos, one of them also provides the energy of lower manas. They hold the same relation to the logos as the dense physical body does to man. That's what we were saying. And all that concerns the evolution of man must, in this particular place, be studied as going on within the physical logoic vehicle. Well, the physical logoic vehicle concerns man as a personality, that's for sure, because the personality goes no higher than the 18th subplane. Let's try to make it a little bigger. It goes no higher than the 18th subplane of the three lower planes. So the personality focus and the lower mental focus is both on subplane number 4, and that is certainly within the dense physical body of the solar logos, and also within the dense physical body of the planetary logos, also there. Okay. They deal with the display of physical energy from the solar logoic point of view, from the point of view. Physical energy, even though it's astral and mental energy to the solar logos, it's physical energy. They deal with the working out in the physical vehicle of all divine purposes within the physical vehicle of the solar logos, and with the physical organization of a certain great cosmic life, to be unnamed, not named. We are sometimes told there is a great Devic life, which is the life of the dense physical vehicle of the solar logos. And the objective there is not to become trapped in the tendencies and the patterns of this great Devic life, because that will mean the end of all proper evolution within this second major solar system. Okay, particularly is this so when we view the two hierarchies under consideration. They are the lowest residue of the previous solar system. They develop to a certain point. They still remain part of the third aspect of the solar logos. They are in his dense physical vehicle, though we can question what their position was in the previous solar system, when perhaps that dense physical vehicle was a principle. They are the lowest residue of the previous system, and the energy of that matter, liquid, gaseous, and dense, which the vibration of the logoic permanent atom, correlated with Saturn and on the plane Adi, attracts to itself in the building of the divine form. You know, the human permanent atom, physical permanent atom, is found on the first or atomic subplane of the systemic etheric physical plane. And when we, and the plane Adi, we realize, is this higher plane where the logoic permanent atom is found. And on what subplane one is not sure, but at least it is found on the plane of Adi, which is the logoic plane, and it attracts to itself in the dense physical body of the solar logos certain types of matter to build intended forms. Okay, so these two hierarchies, the sixth hierarchy of lunar lords and the seventh hierarchy, called the baskets of nourishment, are the lowest residue of the previous system. and the energy of that matter, liquid, gaseous, and dense, which the vibration of the logoic permanent atom on the plane Adi attracts to itself in the building of divine form within the dense physical body of the solar logos. For purposes of clarification and of generalization, it might be noted that the seventh hierarchy is the life or energy found at the heart of every atom. This is a key definition. Might be noted that the seventh hierarchy, the baskets of nourishment, they are called. Let's see what else they are called. 1, 2, 3, 4. There we go. They are called elemental lives, the baskets of nourishment, the blinded lives ruled by Aquarius, and the moon and the colors violet. They are the life, the etheric life or energy found at the heart of every atom. The life of the atom, it is implied, is etheric in nature and not dense physical at all. They are the positive aspect of every what we normally call physical atom, although there are etheric atoms as well. And the sixth hierarchy is the life of the forms of all the etheric bodies of every tangible object. And by that, I assume we can mean the many life forms as well, because they are tangible objects. They are the life of the forms of the of all the etheric bodies of every tangible object. So somehow the work of the seventh creative hierarchy is much more minute. It deals with the tiny atom, and the sixth creative hierarchy is the life of the aggregates of all these atoms as they are built into forms, both apparently inanimate and animate. The function of this hierarchy is well described in the words of the old commentary. We're not sure which one this is. It may be the hierarchy, which is the sixth creative hierarchy. He seems to mention the seventh creative hierarchy first, and this is really all he says about them. So, whatever research we can do has to start from this point. The devas hear the word go forth. They sacrifice themselves, and out of their own substance they build the form desired. They draw life and the material from themselves and yield themselves to the divine impulse. These are these hierarchies, so many of them are devic lives, and we're speaking here of the devic lives which build themselves into the lower forms, and especially the etheric aspect of these lives. If we look carefully at the map, we will see that the higher four subplanes of each plane can be considered devic. In other words, devic and etheric. Etheric is what I mean. Subplane 4, 5, 6, and 7, or we can call it 4, 3, 2, 1, are definitely etheric, and we're used to considering them as etheric. But when we get to the astral plane and we're talking about astral forms, we should think that they are built upon a kind of etheric aspect of the astral plane, subplane, astral subplanes 4, 3, 2, 1. And the same goes for the mental plane. In one respect, our fourth subplane, which is still within the lower three worlds, is considered etheric to the lower subplanes. And as we can well imagine, subplane 3, 2, and 1, within which the egoic lotus has its expression, are considered etheric archetypal molding, patterning, etc., to the lower three subplanes of the mental plane. So they are called lunar lords, this hierarchy number six, but we're particularly interested in the way they build themselves into form, how they become the forms themselves. So again, what DK is saying here, the sixth hierarchy is the life of all the forms of the etheric bodies of every tangible object. So when he's talking about etheric bodies, we have to wonder whether he is confining himself to the etheric physical plane or whether he is also bringing in the etheric aspect of the astral plane and even the etheric aspect of the mental plane. There are some things here to be straightened out, because the connection between lunar lords and the life of all forms, the life of the forms of the etheric bodies of every tangible object, a bridge has to be built between those two ideas. Let's see here. Yeah. So as we see here, they are called lunar lords, and they have their own patterning nature. They have their own archetypal etheric nature, and they substand the forms that are found within the etheric physical dimension, the astral dimension, and the lower mental dimension. That's really all he gives. It's the realm of matter. DK pretty much has been writing a book on psychology. Even Cosmic Fire is a book on psychology. He does spend some pages dealing with matter per se in Cosmic Fire, but his is mostly a psychological approach from the second aspect perspective. He's dealing more with solar fire than with any other type of fire, so we find him giving less attention to the strictly material factors, especially the lowest factors concerning the residue of the previous solar system. This is all we really have on it, and when you think about it, this is the realm which modern science is beginning to study, express within the etheric realm, as well as the astral and mental realm. So we are just lifting the veil a very little bit, and this table of creative hierarchies is vast, dealing with all of these hierarchies of angelic and man-like lives, and our science is only slightly penetrating, just slightly. Okay, friends, well, we have somehow, with, of course, much to be desired, studied the 12 creative hierarchies over a number of these webinars, a number of these adventures, and hopefully there have been ideas, or thoughts at least, suggested which can open some doors. By no means have we solved some of the most demanding problems, among which is the true plane of expression of the solar angel on its own plane, not the higher mental plane, but whatever plane it may be, and it may be Buddhic, but we have not solved that one. We have not solved the way in which the solar angels represent the five liberated, one almost liberated hierarchy. We have not solved the issue of the second creative hierarchy being the prototypes of the monads, nor have we solved the manner in which monads appear through emanation from a higher source. I've always felt that the third creative hierarchy, called the triads, or triadal lives, are the source which provides the human monad with its triadic fields of expression, and that the second creative hierarchy provides the monads with its monadic field of expression, hence its vehicles. But the monad is the monad, and has ever been. So it's hard to think of any hierarchy per se creating the monad, because the monad, in a way, is the uncreated. When the universal logos, or the point, comes forth, the point appearing in Be-ness, we might say Be-ness, B-E and Ness, that point is the one universal monad, the pure being of the one life. It is what I call the positude having come forth from the great unknown. It is one monad, one item of pure being, one assertion of pure being, one positude. And all monads are that. And yet the mystery of subdivision through limited self-perception continues. That's how I think emanation takes place, the will of the one perceiver to limit its perception of itself. Every successive limitation of perception of its own nature becomes a new emanated entity. In other words, a psychological universe in which all actions are acts of perception. Down here we think we act with our hands, with our legs, with, you know, we act with our organs of action, etc. But on the highest planes, actions are acts of perception. At least this is my theory, and the thing that seems to provide the greatest rationale for the modus operandi of our universe to me at this time. We go on to, are we on page 50, I think, tabulation number 3, a very important chart. It divides into dynamic energy and into magnetic energy, I believe. Yeah, it should, anyway. Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah, magnetic energy. Okay. So, we are talking about some of the major energies in our local cosmos system. Dynamic energy is obviously that of the will, that related to the first aspect, that related to electric fire. And the first part of the dynamic energy, I may have to turn electric fire. It begins with Sirius, interestingly enough, perhaps in terms of Sirius's impact on our local system being put in the preeminent place. We have Sirius. Well, I think it's better if I go over here, because this is just a little bit difficult to see. Here's Esoteric Astrology, page 50, and we'll go down a bit. Yeah, all right, it's a little smaller, but you can get the idea. It's laid out a little bit better. We have dynamic energy, the energy of the will. It's operating through Sirius, the Great Bear, and the Pleiades. Sirius is put in the first place, probably because of its amazing relationship to our solar logos and the fact that though a dwarf star, and hence a relatively minor logos in the larger scheme of things, for us, it is the monumental logos. So it operates through the signs, or constellations rather, Cancer and Capricorn, and it further channels its energy through Saturn and the fifth creative hierarchy, but it's the fifth liberated creative hierarchy, or almost almost liberated creative hierarchy. That's why it says it's the unknown. So if we look at the table of creative hierarchies, we will see that we are talking about this hierarchy, the fifth unknown, or the eighth. This is a profound chart in this case. Okay, let's look at that. So, it works Sirius at very important. Sirius is the cosmic Christ from a certain perspective. And it's working through the two gates. Cancer, the gate into life of those who must know death, and Capricorn, the gate into life of those who know no death. And through the planet Saturn, one of three planets through which Sirius functions. And it is somehow energizing the fifth grade of hierarchy, which is called veiling the Christ. See that? Veiling the Christ. Saturn is usually connected with the third of the manifested creative hierarchies. There must therefore be a connection between this fifth, almost liberated hierarchy and the third of the manifested creative hierarchies ruled by Saturn. The Sirian energy, which is so important in sponsoring the solar angels, is going through that particular hierarchy, number 5 or 10, depending on which way you're counting, which is related to the fifth manifested creative hierarchy, which is number 10 or 5. I think we can see this. In other words, this fifth creative hierarchy, whose numbers are, in a way, its numbers are 5 and 8, okay, but the number 5 is there, not 10, is related to the fifth creative hierarchy, whose numbers are, and I think I better make this a little smaller, whose numbers are 5 and 10. I said earlier that Venus is the higher octave, the lower octave of Neptune, and Neptune the higher octave of Venus. So this fifth manifested creative hierarchy of solar angels, the lower part of it anyway, higher part of it, is ruled by Venus. We discussed in an earlier webinar the crocodiles and the downward pointing human personality of a lunar nature. But this particular hierarchy is ruled by Venus, and its higher correspondence is Neptune, which rules the fifth, almost liberated, creative hierarchy. Okay, so this is all on the cardinal cross of liberated spirit, a cross which does not come into activity before the fourth initiation is completed. As a matter of fact, at the fourth initiation, it's kind of an initiation of no man's land. The individual is not on the fixed cross. The individual is not yet on the cardinal cross. So we're talking about states of energy which far transcend the crucifixion of man and can only begin to be appreciated perhaps at the mastership or the fifth initiation of man. So Saturn is one of the major conduits for Sirius, as is Neptune, as is Uranus. And the fifth creative hierarchy is particularly Sirian. That's what I want to talk about. This Cancerian caretaking energy is associated with Sirius. And with the solar angels down below, working with Capricorn, are responding very strongly to this fifth, almost liberated creative hierarchy, because they are the great mothers or compassionate caretakers of man. So Sirius is working through that hierarchy. How interesting. Because that is the hierarchy which is responsible for redeeming so much of what goes on below. It's a Christ-like hierarchy. Its number is 8. 8 is one of the numbers of the Christ. It's also quite a negative number in the lower scorpionic sense and relating to the 8th sphere and the rejecting lives. I'll call them the rejecting lives because they are rejecting before they are rejected. Cosmos is very fair, so if you make the right choices, you are never rejected. The great compassion does not want to reject any of its aspects. Well, even rejection is a sending back for re-education, really, until integration becomes possible. Then we have dynamic energy also pouring through the Great Bear. Well, see, some people might think, well, Sirius is in the number one position, so it obviously represents the first ray and the Great Bear the second ray. Well, if so, that would be a very special case. The Great Bear is also part of this dynamic energy. The three super constellations, as we're told, Sirius, Great Bear, Pleiades. Although, you know, on a higher turn of the spiral, I wonder whether the Little Bear should not be substituted for Sirius. I think it has a higher correspondence to Sirius. Anyway, the Great Bear working through Aries and Libra. And it's the second creative hierarchy. So these prototypes of the monads, which are definitely connected with the planetary logoi, are working through the second creative hierarchy. Interesting, because the sun veiling Vulcan is found in association with the first creative hierarchy, ruled by Leo. Great Bear and Leo have a special relationship. And so the Great Bear, I think, has a strong connection with the first creative hierarchy, but here it's given in connection with the divine builders or the prototypical hierarchy with in relation to the human monads. No. I see what this is. All right. We're going up and not down. All right. That is a mistake on my part. I was in the realm of the manifested hierarchies. No, instead, we go up here. We go into this hierarchy, Aries and the Great Bear. There we go. That's more like it. I couldn't quite understand that, except in a way, there is one way we can relate this. We can relate to number two. We can say that the monads are part of the planetary logoi. They emanate in a way, or are stored within the centers of the planetary logoi, and the higher prototypes of the planetary logoi are the Great Bear. So there we would have an alignment between the Great Bear, the planetary logoi, and the second creative hierarchy, which manifested creative hierarchy, which are the prototypes of the monads. But instead, we're going up into a realm which will be still more difficult to understand. It's Aries bringing in its sign Libra. Libra rules, we see, the third manifested creative hierarchy. So the third manifested creative hierarchy is connected with the second unmanifested creative hierarchy. I mean, via Aries and Libra. This is a hierarchy which expresses itself in the following manner: unity through effort, Aries and Libra. So somehow this Great Bear, Aries, Libra relationship working through the sun and Vulcan, which sometimes represents the heart of the sun, brings about unity through effort, and it's on the fourth subplane of the cosmic astral plane. And that is important because the fourth subplane of the cosmic astral plane is the one on which our planetary logos is fighting a great battle. In order to achieve the kind of mastery which Venus has already achieved, so there are cross pulls on this fourth sublevel of the cosmic astral plane, and the objective is to achieve unity through a great struggle. We assume that Aries and Libra are involved in that struggle, and the sun can be considered the principle of unification in this respect. Okay, I think we'll have time to get through this. Through it, but not master it, of course. Then finally, the Pleiades. In this particular map, it looks like Sirius represents the first aspect, the Great Bear the second, and Pleiades the third. But if we really look at it, it's all completely reversed. The Pleiades are really a master center, the hub of the cosmic wheel, around which our sun and a number of other solar logoi appear to revolve. So the Pleiades considered as a whole could be considered related to the first aspect, Sirius, the cosmic Christ, to the second aspect, the Great Bear, well, sometimes to the first and sometimes to the second, rarely to the third aspect. I understand how people derive this, though. The Pleiades are operative with respect to discipleship life. These relationships will be discussed later in the book. They are working through Gemini and Sagittarius, and they are working through the still the liberated hierarchies. Gemini is the third of the fourth of the liberated hierarchies. It's on the sixth subplane of the cosmic astral plane, and we have here the sixth ray and desire for duality. Well, interesting, the sixth ray correlates with Sagittarius, and desire for duality correlates with Gemini. Sagittarius is the lunar, is the sign or constellation associated with the lunar lords. So very interestingly, on the sixth subplane of the cosmic astral plane, there is a relationship to the sixth subplane of the cosmic physical plane. Let's see how this works out. Here is this Pleiades, Gemini, Sagittarius relationship. Here's the Gemini part of it. Desire for duality is on the sixth subplane of the cosmic astral plane. And if we go over here to the manifested creative hierarchies, we see the Sagittarius rulership of the sixth subplane of the cosmic physical plane. There's a great involvement here in desire and the struggle between two different types of desire. So one can see that some degree of pain must be involved in this. The fourth creative hierarchy still has an unknown name, but we sense this desire for one or other of the dualities. And we sense also that this higher or sixth, this higher or fourth creative hierarchy working through the sixth subplane of the cosmic astral will be influential in relation to the astral plane. And it reminds me of the path of magnetic work, which is the second path out of our solar system, and it goes to the cosmic astral plane, and from there it presides over the maintenance of our astral, systemic astral plane, putting in the good energy, drawing off the bad energy, and in general, taking care of the condition of our astral plane, through which the lunar lords manifest particularly. I mean, when you look at this, these lunar lords, the sacrificial fires, the planet Mars, the color red, much of the astral nature is suggested, and the comments here are water and the astral plane. So there's a, if we can do nothing else, we can draw a connection between this sixth, lower creative hierarchy and the fourth creative hierarchy on the sixth plane of the cosmic astral plane, which probably in a certain way would be called the sixth if we can continue to number on the higher two planes of the cosmic astral plane. Well, this is just setting up the conditions for understanding. Frankly, we do not have the method of really fathoming what's being said here. All the above energies are called into play as far as man is concerned during the major initiations upon the path of initiation. So the Great Bear, Pleiades, and Sirius are not really called into expression until we begin to take the third, the fourth, and the fifth initiation. Now sometimes we have the problem with major initiations. What really are they? The major initiations are sometimes called initiations 1 through 5, because there are minor initiations. For instance, between initiation 1 and 2, there are initiations on the astral plane. They are minor. And even before initiation number 1, there are two minor initiations which have to do with the opening of various tiers of petals. So anyway, even the term major initiations is problematic, but since generally we are told that the energies of Great Bear Sirius Pleiades do not come into effect before the third initiation, we can, I think, interpret the idea here of major initiations as relating to initiation 3, 4, 5, and beyond. Sirius is certainly called in at the Transfiguration. Yes, and at every initiation following, the Great Bear with its seven ray lions may be called in at the sixth initiation, which starts us on a particular path, a particular monadic path. Pleiades, they bring in cosmic Buddhi, and the truly Buddhic initiation is the fourth. There are various ways beyond my comprehension that these greater energies can be used. I don't think they're necessarily confined to any one particular initiation. Probably the Pleiades, representing the one about whom naught may be said, may be drawn in at some of the very highest initiations, maybe the seventh, maybe even the ninth. That would fit well, because there are nine major stars in the Pleiades, the seven sisters and their two parents. And it's the divine feminine, or as one of the very good astrologers has called it, the feminine. Okay, so the ninth initiation would be a good time for Pleiadian energy to be drawn in. So the higher initiations involve these three super constellations. Well, okay, I thought we'd get through this particular chart before our hour was up, but we will, in number 25, continue with it. And for the moment, then, we've been talking about three great types of dynamic energy operating through the three super constellations, exalted in a way above the zodiacal constellations, Sirius, the Great Bear, and the Pleiades. And we've been trying to look at what order they might have. We've been looking at the signs that their energy is conveyed through, and the planets that through which they are conveyed. We didn't say much about Mercury, but it's sometimes called the star of conflict. And when we're dealing with the desire for duality, we have a great conflict set up through Gemini. So Mercury certainly tries to mediate that conflict and bring about harmony through it. These expressions can be looked at in various ways. There's a very material aspect coming through the Pleiades. There's a very willful aspect coming through the Great Bear. There's a very strong love wisdom aspect coming through Sirius, one of the versions of the cosmic Christ. So, you know, the last word cannot be said about these things. All right, let us look at the great invocation. Okay, let's go. All right, here we are. The great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Om. Om. everyone. We're stopping on page 50. And we will continue also on page 50. And that will be it for the moment. And we'll see you in Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 25. All right, which I hope will still take place today. We will see. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.